This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 7th. And according to my guest this hour, liberals have taken over academia and are using our universities to indoctrinate new generations of students. Are college campuses teeming with left-wing professors who are telling students what to think? Should more conservative professors be hired to diversify, intellectually diversify our universities? We're going to be talking about these issues with David Horowitz. He is the author of a brand new book, Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. And you can talk with him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. David Horowitz was an organizer of the New Left movement in the 1960s, but he changed his political stripes, and we talked to him previously about that. He is currently president of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and founding editor of the online news magazine, frontpagemag.com. He is a New York Times bestselling author and National Book Award nominee. Some of his books include The Professors, The 100 Most Dangerous Academics in America, Radical Sun, and the recently published Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. And he joins me by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
I understand you're joining us from the West Coast, and it's 2 hours earlier.
A little early, yes.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. So I thought university professors, including those on the left, were big advocates of academic freedom. Why do you say that they're waging a war against academic freedom?
Well, this war is described in my book. First of all, let me say that the book is focused on certain segments of the university. Universities are large institutions, and I don't see anything wrong with the way physics, the hard sciences, and the professional schools are run, with the exception probably of the schools of social work and education. The book is really, and my campaign is focused on the academic manners in the classroom, what's appropriate for a professor in class. And the fact is that my campaign to establish, or to actually it's to get administrations and faculties to enforce appropriate professional procedures in the classroom has been attacked in a very reckless dishonest way.
This is the
American Federation of Teachers and the American Association of University Professors. So I'm accused of trying to get legislatures to control curricula and hiring, which is false. Trying to get universities to fire left-wing professors and hire conservatives, which is false.
Yeah, so what do you
want
to do?
Trying to introduce new restrictions to professorial speech, which is also false. What I've said is that, actually, the principles I've advanced are principles such as Penn State has its existing academic freedom provision, which is probably 40 or 50 years old, says very clearly that in a democracy, it's not the function of a teacher to indoctrinate his or her students, and therefore a teacher must provide students with materials or access to materials that would allow them to think for themselves. I don't think this is very controversial, and I'll bet that we don't have anybody that actually opposes this principle, but this principle is not enforced, and I have shown in my book many courses. I give samples of courses where only one side of very controversial issues are presented, and where professors' agendas are political rather than academic. A professor can teach any controversy or doctrine in the classroom, but it's not the place of a professor to try to recruit students.
Yeah, can you give us an example of a teacher, a professor who is indoctrinating students? Yeah, I mean, what?
There are women's studies courses. Not every women's studies course is an indoctrination course, but an awful lot of them are, in that in order to get a grade in the course, student is required to adopt the perspective of radical feminists. For example, the idea that gender is socially constructed, which means that environment, the social environment, determines what constitutes feminine and masculine characteristics. In its extreme version of radical feminism holds that the only difference between men and women that's not obviously anatomical is socially constructed and not biologically based. Now, I would have no objection to teachers bringing up this theory proposing it. But what happens is that the course assumes that the theory is true. A course description can begin, because gender is socially constructed, that is, because environment determines who is female and who is male. Yeah. Therefore, and so, such and such follows.
So your academic...
So that's indoctrination.
Your academic Bill of Rights would say that this particular professor or this type of teaching needs to be countered by, writings of other points of views, or the professor has to bring in other people.
There are plenty of actually feminist critics of this viewpoint. But women's studies should be the study of women and various perspectives on women. It should not be schooling students or training them to be radical feminists. And a lot of the courses actually make as a requirement for the grade recruiting students to radical organizations. Peace studies is an ideological, partisan political course. It's anti-military. And, of course, in a democracy, the rationale for having a military is that it keeps the peace. So you would expect a professor of military science to be on the faculty of peace studies programs. There are no such professors of military science on peace study faculty.
So you're not saying that universities should dump their women's studies programs or their peace studies programs, or are you?
No, just make them professional. Just make them adhere to the principles of academic freedom as defined in the past by the American Association of University Professors. A good example is this teacher, Kevin Barrett, at University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we remember him.
Caused the university quite a bit of trouble and money, I'll bet. I mean, here is somebody who was teaching in class about 9/11, and teaching a conspiracy theory, advocating a conspiracy theory on the causes of 9/11, which would require knowledge of, when metals melt and things like that. And his qualification for this is that he has a PhD in African languages and literature.
Right.
And that's a form of, first of all, it's unprofessional. It's a form of consumer fraud, because the University of Wisconsin advertises in its catalog to parents getting ready to send their kids there and to prospective students that it's an institution where they're going to get expert knowledge in these fields. If you want opinion, Wisconsin Public Radio is free.
Yeah. Well, now, just for clarification, that particular course that Kevin Barrett was teaching was not exclusively his belief, and he was very public in his belief that the government was somehow involved with the 9/11 attacks, but that was one section of the course.
He shouldn't be teaching a course in a field that he's not qualified to teach. Otherwise, why should the University of Wisconsin pay $100,000, say, for full professors when they can pull somebody off the street and pay them $30,000. I mean, the whole system is based on the presumption of a certain degree of expertise. And the reason that this is important in what I'm talking about is because if you look at women's studies programs, and I'm only picking on them to simplify the examples here, you'll find that women professors, or male professors too in this field, who have degrees in English literature or comparative literature, are teaching about globalization, because they have to teach international feminism, and how the international capitalist economy oppresses women, blacks, and poor people. Now, these professors don't have any academic qualifications to teach about the international economy. I find that, it's another example of the violations of academic standards and academic freedom.
Let me jump in. We are talking with David Horowitz. He is the author of a new book, Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. And you can join in, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. The book talks about David Horowitz's campaign to get an academic bill of rights adopted and get more intellectual diversity on college campuses, and talks about the fierce opposition that he says he has encountered from the left over this. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 22 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 7th. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben talks with the leader of the Freedom Writers Foundation, a nonprofit organization for disadvantaged students in classrooms across the country. Author of Teach With Your Heart, Lessons I Learned from the Freedom Writers. That's coming up after 5. We're talking with a writer, and many other things. David Horowitz is our guest. He is the author of the recently published Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. We have lots of callers, David Horowitz, who want to talk with you, maybe share some examples or maybe challenge you. But let me ask you, what evidence is there that there is any indoctrination going on at all anyway? Aren't our young people pretty smart and they can think for themselves whether or not a teacher is exposing or saying a point of view, a personal point of view in a classroom?
There's a difference. I think our young people are pretty smart. I don't think that one has to show that students are being indoctrinated, but I think it's pretty evident. If I've been on a lot of campuses. The proof that I offer in the book is the description of courses, which are clearly courses that have no academic purpose, that they're political courses. They're designed as political courses, and they're courses to, one, instill a doctrine, and two, recruit students. It doesn't really matter It doesn't even matter if no students are indoctrinated. Every student in that class is being robbed of an education. An education is to teach students how to think, not to tell them what to think. If they don't get two sides to controversial issues, they're being systematically miseducated, and it should be a concern to everyone.
Yeah. Let me go to the phones, take a few calls. Jay in Wausau. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Great to hear you on the show. And I can't say that I have ever agreed with anything you've written, either from before my time as part of the New Left or currently, but except for your points on academic freedom in the abstract. I think it's great that you take some of the positions you do. Now, that being said, I'm curious why you focus on the liberal-conservative split and why you seem to consistently attack the liberal professors who unduly influence their students. And I was wondering if you could point to any conservative professors that you feel are deserving of possibly being mentioned in the most dangerous professors in the country. I mean, there's a long tradition of people like Leo Strauss who taught political philosophy, and you can't say that he was objective in the presentation of
Well, I've never said. First of all, I appreciate that even though you disagree with me, you're presenting this in a civil way and recognizing that the kind of ideas that, as you say, in the abstract, I'm advancing. But you're really discussing another book, and I've never attacked or criticized people for just being liberals or leftists. I actually consider myself pretty liberal. I don't think it's liberal to exclude one point of view in a classroom. But what I have addressed my criticisms to is professors whose primary identification is as political activists, who think that activism and scholarship are integrally related, when in fact they're at odds with each other. If the term academic implies that there's no agenda, it implies a disinterested pursuit of knowledge. I have absolutely no objection to a professor who would be a Marxist or a feminist or any kind of leftist if their primary reason for being on a faculty and in a classroom, and as long as they are in that role, is the disinterested pursuit of knowledge. I do have a problem with anybody whose purpose in being in a classroom is to advance an ideological or political agenda. It doesn't mean that they can't teach and say, this is my point of view. It does mean that the students have got to be given a full access to other materials and that the professor has to make very clear that ascribing to their sectarian point of view is not part of the grade or part of what constitutes achievement.
But you are saying that these classes that you object to that just present one point of view are a left-leaning point of view.
Well,
there are no conservatives doing this.
Well, I never said there were no conservatives.
Well, that's what
I
was,
I defended a left-wing student in California who was in a class taught by a pro-life professor who was punished for not grade-wise for not ascribing to their point of view. This speaks to that original issue that you brought up at the beginning of the show, and that is that there's a dwindling presence of conservatives on faculties. If you look in the liberal arts, in some fields like sociology or anthropology, the ratio of people on the left to conservatives is about 30 to 1. In such a situation, most students are not likely never to have a conservative professor. And if the number of conservatives on a faculty is tiny, as it normally is, this means that they have to look over their shoulders and be very careful about standing up for students standing up against the faculty left. If you look at the paradigm case, really, is Harvard, where Larry Summers was the most powerful president in the history of the modern research university. And he crossed the left on two issues. One was his attempt to get Cornel West, a black professor, to do scholarly work, which Cornel West has not done for 20 years. And the second was his suggestion in a closed meeting with 12 people that the reason there might not be more women at the high ends, in the highest positions in the hard sciences at Harvard, is because women, one, had a conflict because they were child-rearing and didn't want to spend the 70 hours a week over 20 years that's required to get to the top in those fields. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that women might have a less of an aptitude for mathematics, which is a scientifically established fact.
Well, but even if it weren't, a lot of people are saying that that's not a scientifically established fact.
There are neuroscience, you know, studies in neuroscience. There's a bell curve, and there are more men at the high end and more men at the low end, which means that there are more men who have less aptitude for mathematics. But at the very high end, there are more men. So, look, let me withdraw the statement that it's true. Mm-hmm. Not important. It's a
right. But in any case, Summers ended up resigning. Yeah,
through many studies that this is the case. You could challenge the way the studies are done. It doesn't really matter. For offering a hypothesis, Summers became the first president in the history of the modern research university to be censured by his faculty and fired. If Larry Summers, who is a liberal, was a powerful individual, who's a very respected academic, could not stand up against the left, I assure you, your ordinary conservative on a faculty cannot stand up.
David Horowitz, let me bring in a caller who I think does want to talk about the Larry Summers situation. Art in Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. You know, I was about to bring that up, and but David's already covered that situation, and you know, I think the important thing is though that it was not a statement that he made. It was more or less like a my understanding was it was a a suggestion that we explore all different avenues, including that one, and that was enough to set some professors off. And I understand there was about 500 of them that protested. I'm sorry.
It was 200. It was 10% of the
200.
Faculty.
I never realized Harvard had that many faculty members. But my other another example that I think that really highlights this, and perhaps you can fill in the names of who we're talking about here. After Ward Churchill was out making speeches and things, there was a professor, I believe, in the University of Tennessee who actually had some. He was an untenured professor who actually had some American Indian blood. There was another professor who was circulating a petition to support Churchill when he came to campus, and this gentleman was upset because, you know, Churchill is not an American Indian and was acting fraudulently. He declined to sign the petition, and this woman happened to also be on the hiring board or something of that nature, and she promptly drummed him out. She mounted a campaign to get the guy fired because he wouldn't sign this petition. And so he was moved out. I heard him interviewed on the radio, but I can't recall.
It was at IUPUI in Indiana. It was a law professor. The left got him fired. Well, he wasn't fired. He withdrew.
Yeah. Ward Churchill?
No. I forget his name.
Yeah, but in any case,
it was at IUPUI.
Whatever happened to Ward Churchill, and how does he and his story fit into your thing?
Ward Churchill, and let me just say, I defended his right to say what he said, however reprehensible, and not be fired for writing an article on the Internet. We still have a First Amendment in this country. But Ward Churchill was hired. He should never have been hired. He only has an M.A., and a professorial credential is usually a PhD, but his MA was in graphic arts, which is he's a painter, so that's not a qualification for teaching ethnic studies, which is what he was hired to do. And he eventually was promoted to full professor and chairman of the department, despite the lack of any credential for teaching ethnic studies. This is an example of the academic corruption that I refer to.
And it's hiring people who aren't qualified.
That's right. Yeah. And let me say again, since people are confused over this issue, the difference between free speech and academic freedom. Academic freedom is not a license to say anything you want in a classroom. If it were, then astronomy teachers could teach that astrology is scientific fact. Geography professors could teach that the Earth is flat. And English professors could go on rants against George Bush and the war in Iraq in English classes, which unfortunately they do. That is not what academic freedom is. free inquiry under a professional discipline. It's always been defined that way. That means when a professor, when a professor's on a street corner, they can say anything they want. When they go into a classroom, they have to be professional. If you are a preacher and go into a church on Sunday and preach a sermon that God doesn't exist, you will be looking for a new job on Monday, First Amendment or no. And the reason is that a church, like a university, is a professional institution. It has a mission. And if the professionals in the institution are permitted to say anything they want, it will destroy the mission of the institution. The mission of a university in a free society is to educate students as to how to think, how to assemble evidence, how to construct an argument, how to know where the evidence is, and so forth.
Yeah.
It is not to tell them what to think. Yeah. That is, whether they should be for or against the war in Iraq, or whether they should think that nurture creates, or that human differences are based biologically or socially. Those are controversial issues to which there is no definitive answer, and students need to be made to know that.
Rick in Park Falls is with us, thanks to Art in Appleton. Hi, Rick.
Oh, good morning to you and your guest. I'd like to explain from the outset that I'm a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, and my favorite professor there was a man named Professor Meek, who was a visiting professor from Cambridge in England. And he was
Ronald Meek?
What's that?
Was his name Ronald Meek?
I can't remember his first name, to tell you the truth, but it
Ronald
sounds
Meek
kind of familiar.
Yeah.
He was, anyway, he gave a course in intermediate macroeconomic theory.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, and he said from the outset that he was a British socialist and that he didn't actually believe in capitalism, but he said that won't affect my ability to teach this course on the principles of, you know, the basis of capitalist economics. And he was correct. He did a marvelous job.
When I was a leftist, I read Ronald Meek, you know, what he said is right. I mean, he had a knowledge of macroeconomics, and if he taught that, that's fine. No, I don't care what his views were.
Yeah.
With what I got from the tenured professors on the Madison campus, and that is, I could give you a series of vignettes. In sociology class, for instance, a professor said that when the United States government adopted the .45 automatic pistol, which supplanted the .38 caliber revolver, he said that prove the tendency of American military escalationism in places like Vietnam. And there were other examples. When Gene Kirkpatrick came to the university later.
That's an idiotic statement.
Oh, yeah, I know, but that's the kind of thing. And then when we had a discussion once of these regulatory licenses the FCC gives to the big media outlets, and because I was interested in economics, I just made a suggestion in class that instead of giving these things away free, that the government should charge for these very valuable licenses. And I was actually hissed by members of the class, and the professor didn't even mention that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Rick, do you think that our guest is right, that there's too many of these liberal professors on campus?
Well, I never said there's too many liberals.
Well,
I said they're out of control.
All right, they're out of control.
Professors are out of control.
Well, I'm just saying they apparently are incapable of separating their political ideology from the course content that they're teaching. That's the problem.
Yes. That is the problem.
Yeah, and you are not. I recall in the past at least hearing about a call for hiring more conservative professors. You are not calling for that.
No, my academic Bill of Rights, the first tenet of it is you can't hire or fire a professor based on their political views. I think it would be a good idea if faculties found ways to encourage more conservative views on campus, and that could be you could invite a visiting professor, you could hold a symposium on the ideas of conservatives like Thomas Sowell or Friedrich Hayek, or Leo Strauss for that matter, or Leo Strauss is somebody I've never read. That would be very helpful. Respect respecting conservative views would be helpful. All too often, conservative students are harassed. Professors, I visited a law school, actually Western New England Law School, where I spoke, where the students I met with, the conservative students, said their professors in constitutional law would never mention the names of Scalia or Thomas without snickering or making some derisory remark. That is a way of communicating to students that conservative views are illegitimate. It is not, and it shows no respect for difference, no respect for the other, no respect for our democracy, which is built on the assumption that it's legitimate to have different points of view. Leftists get really upset when their patriotism is called into question, and the reason is that they want to have their views respected and considered just the way any other views are. Well, you know, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. This is the principle. In our political dialogue has become very embittered, and there's a lot of accusations on both sides all the time. A university is supposed to be a scene of elevated discourse where students are taught to consider the intellectual issues, and therefore respect for conservative ideas is very important.
Our guest is David Horowitz. He is talking with us about his new book, Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, if you would like to talk with him. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you, and Kathleen welcomes in NPR political junkie Ken Rudin. And they'll talk about what some are calling the invisible presidential primary. We'll find out what that's all about coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about politics on a university campus. A guest, David Horowitz, saying that too many of our college campuses have out-of-control liberal professors on them, just presenting their point of view in classes, and that shouldn't be. He's calling his new book Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. David Horowitz, I wanted to ask you about a breaking news story on the UW-Madison campus over the last week or so, and I know producer Leo Duran shared with you some of the information on this. I just want to get your take on this and how this plays into your concerns, if at all. A University of Wisconsin law professor says his comments about the Hmong people have caused pain, but he says he's been misquoted and misunderstood. Professor Leonard Kaplan says he did not make some of the hateful statements that some students claim he did during a lecture in his legal process class. He says other statements were taken out of context by critics. He denies saying Hmong men have no skills other than killing, that Hmong women were better off with Hmong men dead, and Hmong men buy their wives. Those were some of the remarks attributed to him by offended students. Kaplan says he understands how his remarks about difficulties the Hmong have faced in settling in Wisconsin, also talking about our legal system and cultural differences, how they could have been misunderstood and seen as disparaging. What do you make of this?
I'm inclined to believe the professor. I read a long account in Inside Higher Ed this morning. I sure wish that when I was misquoted, Inside Higher Ed and other magazines like that would give me as much of a break in explaining what I had actually said. I think this professor is telling the truth. I think that there is such an aura of political correctness on campuses, such a gotcha idea in our culture, where people are lying in wait for you if you say something that can be shown to be politically incorrect, discriminatory in any way. I think his explanations make a lot of sense. It really doesn't relate to my book at all.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, you know, this thing about liberal professors, there are no conservative departments. You know, somebody's going to call and say, what about the business school?
Yeah, business or economics.
Well, a business school is a professional school. Students pay money and sign up because they want to be trained in business techniques. It's not really the place to have anti-capitalist or anti-corporate. I mean, there could be a philosophy of business ethics course, these issues, like say Enron's misdeeds, should certainly be looked at. I'm sure they actually are. But in the liberal arts schools, these are really a lot of them philosophically based. They're supposed to be, you know, they're historically created to examine the foundations of our society. And it's perfectly legitimate to look at radical critiques of our society. But the reality is that every department for example, in the University of Wisconsin, it doesn't matter if you're in the English department, the history department, the sociology department, the peace studies, if they have one department, the women's studies department, cultural studies, American studies, they're all left-wing departments. The theories that they teach and the assumptions they make are on the left, and that's the only reason why I have addressed this. And, of course, the fact is that the organizations that have attacked me, the American Federation of Teachers, the American Association of University Professors, the American Historical Association, and so forth, are all left-wing organizations.
Yeah,
against the war in Iraq. Yeah.
How have they attacked you?
Oh, Joan Wallach Scott, who is the head of the Academic Freedom Committee, she's no longer, and I, the head of the Academic Freedom Committee of the AAUP, and I, its new president, Carrie Nelson, is somebody I spent some time with in Washington and debated, and it's a vast improvement over this woman. But she compared me publicly, or she compared the Academic Bill of Rights to the educational policies of Hitler, Tojo, Mao Zedong, and Stalin. It's discourse like that that has so lowered the level of the debate, and the attacks were initiated by and came from leftists like Scott. She referred to my campaign as the pro-Sharon lobby, in other words, a Zionist plot. This is disgraceful rhetoric by somebody who is a professor at the Advanced Institute for Study at Princeton, which is a venue that Einstein once held court in. I have been dumbfounded, and my book, Indoctrination U, gives lots of examples of this. Gives an example of I visited Reed College, and I was actually very impressed by Reed. Reed is a college in Oregon, a private school, famously left, that boasts in its official documents that 85% of its student body is left. I was very impressed with Reed because they have a traditional curriculum. They don't have women's studies, they don't have black studies, so they actually teach courses the way they were taught 30 and 40 years ago. When you study The Tempest, you actually study Shakespeare, and you don't get a lecture on imperialism. And I thought, as a result, the Reed students were very bright. I met with them, and we were able to have intellectual discussions. I didn't degenerate into political name-calling. And I praised them for that. And I debated the dean of students there. And I praised Reed, and I told the parents, I was on Parents' Day, I said, students, your children are in good hands. And I discussed my Academic Bill of Rights, which doesn't say anything. It says, don't hire professors on the basis of their politics, don't grade students on the basis of their politics, give students access to materials on both sides of controversial issues. That's basically my Academic Bill of Rights. And the dean of students started off by saying, I didn't expect to be the villain of this afternoon, and proceeded to into a 40-minute character assassination in which he took a book which had nothing to do with academic freedom. I had written, it's called The Art of Political War. It was a pamphlet I did for a 2000 political campaign and distorted the whole thing. I mean, in the book I show he just he invented words and said nobody should believe anything that David Horowitz said. That was his discourse for the day. Well, if a liberal, he was a what you would call a liberal. I mean, I don't think he was a left-wing ideologue in any way, but our political climate is so polarized and so bitterly divisive that the dean of students, who was my host, I mean, it was ungracious, you know, thought it was okay to attack me like that. And this back, he actually offered his resignation. The outcry from the Reed College community was so great that he offered the president his resignation, which I wouldn't have wanted to see myself. But and that told me that I'm right in an assumption that I put in all my books, which is that the majority of students and the majority of professors are at the university to pursue academic pursuits. And what I am talking about in my books is a powerful minority, powerful enough to fire a university president, 10% of a faculty, that are political activists and don't respect academic values and or scholarly ones.
All right, let me bring Joe in La Crosse on the air. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joy. Thank you. Just a couple of quick comments. One is, Mr. Horowitz, I've been a fan since the days of heterodoxy. Always enjoyed it.
Well, thank
you. You're welcome. But I think what's happening here is there seems to be a little bit of a scattershot. You mentioned, for instance, courses being taught as they were 30 years ago, but that would leave out environmental ethics. In fact, sir, that would leave out anything even vaguely related to ethics, and I don't think ethics is the domain of either one ideology or another. I think we need to have these discussions. I think we need to look at Shakespeare and then at least talk about the concept of imperialism in terms of how plays are presented. I think the other thing we need to be aware of is that this cuts both ways. From an ideological perspective, there was no one on the left that's ever cried quite so loudly to get rid of somebody as the conservatives when Wade Churchill was making his remarks. And they didn't object to his remarks, sir, as you did, on the basis of perhaps a lack of academic background and a lack of credentials, which might be valid, even if it does seem to be stretching the point. They objected it because of what he said. But you know what? I was hard-pressed to find somebody who could tell me what he said. And after I Googled Churchill and went through the 50 entries vilifying him, I got to his text that he'd actually written the day after September 11th, and what he had to say wasn't just to my way of thinking, simply wasn't incendiary and as inflammatory as what he was made out to be. He was vilified for having stated a perspective that he is, as you point out, because of the First Amendment and the joys of that, entitled to state.
All right. If you're going to discuss imperialism, you better know something about economics and history. I have no objection to the Tempest being brought up as an example in a course on imperialism taught by a qualified professor. I do have an objection to a professor of English literature who has been trained in literature to discuss imperialism in the 17th century. I'm suspicious of your saying you liked heterodoxy after that discourse on Churchill. It happens that I defended Churchill against the governor of the state, who was a personal friend of mine, Bill Owens, when Owens called to fire him. People are very upset and over the terrorist attacks, and that's just something we have to live with. What Churchill said was that the normal workings of the American economy are genocidal, that we are that America is systematically killing minorities all over the world, and that therefore the people who were just business people in the World Trade Center were little Eichmanns. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. It's reprehensible. It's outrageous. It's inflammatory. He had a right to say it on the Internet. In my view, far from being uncontroversial, it is certifiable what he said. America is not a genocidal nation, and it's the Walmart is not, to be compared to, say, IG Farben or German corporations that participated, made poison gas to gas the Jews or something like that. America is an engine of prosperity for poor people. And as I pointed out, if Churchill were correct that America is practicing genocide against minorities, that just shows Churchill's contempt for, say, Mexican-Americans or for Ethiopians who want to come here.
Yeah, let's
talk. The country is being, you know, our doors are being beaten down by black people and Hispanic people and brown people and yellow people who want to come here because they're better treated in America than they are in their own country.
We did do a lot of programs on that.
Churchill, yeah.
Yeah, let's go to Julie in Rice Lake. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess I didn't think I'd get on it so late, but I just wanted to say that I've been reading Horowitz for a while, and I really do enjoy it, and I really do think that a lot of his points on academic freedom are well-founded. I'm a non-traditional student in the UW system, and being so, I love to be challenged in my political viewpoints, and I also consider that my political viewpoints are something that's worth challenging, and I'd love to hear other people's. But at the same time, when I get in a classroom or when I'm speaking, just friendly in the hall with the professor, I have to be afraid of what I say because I've seen in the classroom when I challenge a professor, my class participation grade goes down, and when I go home to write a paper that they assign to me, I know that I'll many times end up crying, being so frustrated that I can't say the way that I interpret something because my grade may be affected by it. I've been told that I'm too strident in my beliefs, which I don't believe that I am because I can sit down and talk with people. And when we see these professors in the classroom in social sciences, like in sociology, talking at the front of the class, you've got a bunch of 19-year-olds sitting there listening.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to cut you short, Julia. You're right, we are out of time. In less than a minute to go, David Horowitz, you think that this continues to be a problem?
It's a huge problem, and I will say, ironically, the students who suffer the most are liberal students because they are never challenged. I agree with the caller. It's important to be challenged, but in a respectful way. And that doesn't happen if you're a conservative student. But for the liberal students, they don't get challenged and they don't get educated. The irony is that those conservative students who have the gumption to stand up and speak out, they're getting a much better education because they know when they open their mouths, they are going to have to defend themselves.
Yeah.
So they're stretched. I think it's just a tragedy for the country that this situation exists. My book, Indoctrination U, documents it. There's a lot more documentation at my website, discoverthenetworks.org.
And we'll leave it there. We're out of time.
We'll leave it there. And thank you. And thank Wisconsin Public Radio for having me.
Thank you. David Horowitz, author of Indoctrination U, The Left's War Against Academic Freedom. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Leo Duran for producing the hour. This is the Ideas Network.